Chapter 13. The Two Immortal Faculties. The Word is the image and the soul of God, the idea is the image of the soul, and the body is the image of the idea. In these words of Hermes and all that follows in the 13th book lies the key to transfiguration, which has to be brought about by the candidate in the Gnostic mysteries himself, with the aid of his two immortal faculties, the soul and the word. We have discussed these two divine faculties and pointed out the way in which they can be awakened and unleashed, and there is not a single entity who could walk the path of true liberation without them. To gain a clear understanding of the significance of these two faculties, you should begin by investigating the microcosm, the mighty ideation power of the Logos. The omnipresent and all-pervading One projects itself into what we call space. Space, as the Rosicrucians state, is not empty. There is no empty space. Space is filled with primordial substance. When the divine idea relating to God's plan for his creature, man, is radiated into space, the microcosm comes into being. You could think of a concentration of primordial substance, of atoms. Initially, the microcosm is the not-yet-embodied monad, a concentration of primordial substance formed as a result of a magnetic principle. The classical Rosicrucians sometimes called such a light-emitting principle a spark, the divine spark. The spark is the nucleus of the monad, and from it a radiation emanates, which gives rise to a sevenfold rotation, a sevenfold magnetic field. With the radiation of this spark as its center, the surrounding magnetic field then becomes a microcosmic field of creation, a field of manifestation. It is in this field that the great process of self-realization has to take place. The time comes when a manifestation, a form, a body, develops in the microcosmic field of creation. This manifestation is, to put it in Hermetic language, the image, the sculpture, the expression of the vivifying radiation of the microcosmic nucleus. This radiation is in keeping with the idea of the Logos, hence the words of verse 26. The body is the image of the idea is manifested via the soul is manifested through the nuclear principle, while the nucleus in turn is an image of the Godhead. And in verse 27, Hermes says, "So the most subtle part of matter is the air or primordial substance. The most subtle part of the air is the soul. The most subtle part of the soul is the spirit. And the most subtle part of the spirit is God." So, in the primordial past, man was a self-manifesting entity in the absolute sense of the word. Through the radiation of the nucleus of the monad, a glorious personality was manifested in the creation field of the monad as a pure image, a pure idea of the Godhead. This entity was equipped with mighty talents that enabled it to act and fulfill a task within the all. But a group of these entities became involved in a process known as the fall, a process we would like to discuss with you in more detail later. One of the results was that the bodies, the images of the divine idea crystallized bodies, became increasingly dense until finally the moment came when an incident occurred involving the radiation of the nucleus on the one hand and the crystallizing bodies on the other. In the end, it was no longer possible for this radiation to provide these bodies with sufficient energy. It was then that the process we know as death first appeared. The discarded crystallizations were replaced by new manifestations, for the radiation of the nucleus went on performing its task. Time and time again, a new form appeared in the microcosm. That is why there are myths which state that in the beginning, man was an androgynous being, a male-female being, a hermaphrodite. This condition could not last, however. A human projection that constantly functions in opposition to its nature will ultimately give rise to an intense conflict, and in this instance it could not be withstood by the radiation of the microcosmic nucleus. Thus, it could no longer express itself in the personality, which at that time lived much longer than it does now and was almost entirely of an astral etheric nature. When this incident between the radiation of the nucleus and the increasingly solidifying personality reached its culmination, the separation of the sexes occurred, so that the personality could be maintained by means of sexual intercourse. From then on, the process of birth was necessary and the relationships were reversed. Disembodied, emptied microcosms were given the opportunity, through the birth of new personalities, to envelop the latter during their birth in nature so that if, at all possible, the age-old process could be restored and death could be abolished. So when a personality is born, it is simultaneously brought into contact with a microcosm. The aim of establishing this connection between personality and microcosm is to restore the original condition and to bring the original, immortal human being back into manifestation, in keeping with the idea of the microcosmic radiation. It was to cooperate with this aim to help restore the original gnosis to your microcosmic world that pupilship of the school of the Golden Rosicross was made available. The modern spiritual school is devoted to this one work. It is certainly not there for the glorification or improvement of your present, nature-born personality, or to make it more divine. There are many primitive and unintelligent methods aimed at such useless endeavors. You are a pupil of this school for the sole purpose of subjecting your present personality, which is at the same time your consciousness, to the Great Restoration, the mighty process of transfiguration, in cooperation with your monad. If that were not what you wanted, there would be no point in your pupilship. It would only be a burden. And if you really do want to bring about this process of restoration, if your entire being, your whole heart, is devoted to that aim, then you will have two mighty faculties at your disposal, the soul and the word, which you can release and apply whenever necessary. It is often a riddle to us why some people have joined our school in view of their inclinations, mentality, and general behavior. During the centuries when the Brotherhood of the Rosicross had to work more in secret, a neophyte was only accepted if he possessed genuine yearning and the firm resolution to enter the glorious process of transfiguration. The neophyte gave himself utterly to that, exerting every atom of his being. But what, in our modern times, ought we to think of pupils who promise and resolve to enter the process, but do not actually do so? Surely that is rather unintelligent, irrational. And is it not also rather immoral, seen from the standpoint of the living body which they have infiltrated? Are such situations not proof of how degenerate, how crystallized, the present racial body has become, and how abnormal the persons concerned have become? Is it not proof of the regrettable fact that in practice, such people can no longer be helped? In keeping with the task of the universal chain, the modern spiritual school has opened wide its gates. Anyone who wishes can enter, providing certain requirements are accepted. So if a person has, of his own free will, accepted those requirements formally, one can expect of honest, normal people that they will live up to their resolutions and keep their promises. If it turns out that they do not, then one can only conclude that they are in a rather seriously submerged state. And there are two mighty faculties that are capable of turning your pupilship into candidateship, and that can lead you to victory. They do not need to be conferred on you. They do not need to be introduced into your system because they already belong to the system of your monad. However, you yourself have to release them. Then they will lead you irresistibly to the ultimate goal. These two immortal faculties are to be found in the nucleus of the microcosm. The first is what the prologue of the Gospel according to John calls the Word. It is the divine idea radiated by the Logos throughout eternity. The second is the radiation of the nucleus that corresponds to the divine idea. By making the heart still, by withdrawing it from all conflict and causing it to enter into a state of deep peace, you make the heart sanctuary open for the soul, the harmonious influx of the light of the monad. When you are vivified by this light, there will be a number of wonderful results, and when these are manifested, one will be able to speak of pupilship in the true sense. Then it will be possible to speak genuinely and literally of a deep connection between the soul and the personality. Then the foundation for restoration, the foundation for transfiguration, will have been laid.
And then the second faculty will be added, the word. The throat chakra will then function in your system in a new way and with an increasing intensity. The nerve center in your throat will concentrate the new light power, which needs to be applied by means of the voice. Consider this wonder. Anyone who frees the basis faculty, the new soul state within his being, surrendering the whole heart to the gnosis and living out of that state, will gain a new, grandiose creative faculty, the word, with the aid of which all the forces controlling the system can be applied, or, if they are harmful, neutralized and eliminated. Every pupil will receive these two faculties if only you will withdraw from the conflict of the heart, if only you are willing to enter the profound peace of Bethlehem and eradicate the anarchy of the voice, if only you are willing to use your voice in the proper way and to overcome the cry of the animal, then the new heaven-earth will open for you in true applied pupilship.